session on how to use great songs in the church. And I want to thank all of you for being here. I know it's hard to choose just one class all day long and go to it, but we're very grateful that some of you have been with us the whole time, and we're glad to see some new faces each time in the session. And it may be that some others will come in as we move along. But I'd like to tell you, for my part, this afternoon, in about the 15 or 20 minutes that I will use, how we put great songs together, the process of this, and then Dr. Boyd will come and lead in some more songs and talk about how to use the music of the book. I want to back up just a little bit in the material that I put up here. These little maps, the yellow color on these maps, represent the parts of the world where our advisory committee came from. And if you look at this, I think you can see we have represented all of the areas of the United States as nearly as we could, especially where we have concentrations of congregations. We have 3 Canadian provinces and 2 foreign countries, Australia and Scotland, represented on that. So I want to tell you about that, if you'd like to look at that. That fascinates us. As we looked at it, we found a few states we wish we hadn't overlooked in getting somebody to serve on the committee. But it impressed us, I think, with how much the United States and the other countries we do have represented in the work in our hymn book. The other thing I want to back up to in telling you about the development of great songs itself, well, these 2 books right here. There is a man whose name possibly you have never heard, who was one of the finest musicians among churches of the Restoration Movement in the North in the closing years of the 19th century and the opening years of the 20th century. This was William E. M. Hackelman, W-E-M, 3 initials, William E. M. Hackelman. He was from Indiana, and he was a trained musician, and he compiled several hymn books. But these 2 that I brought here, with very pompous sounding Latin titles, were books that directly influenced E.L. Jorgensen in the compilation of Great Songs of the Church. His first one was called Gloria in Excelsis, published about 1905. And it was an effort to really elevate the quality of music in the first decade of the 20th century. He followed that with another Latin title called Hymni Ecclesiae, which means hymns of the church, and the subtitle says, or hymns of the church. And both of these books belong to Brother Jorgensen. When E.L. Jorgensen died in 68, I purchased from his widow his hymnal collection. And Sister Jorgensen was very gracious to sell me the collection. And the notes and the markings and the little comments that are found in the different books that came to me in that collection are marvelous to me, to see how his mind was working. And this foreword to Hymni Ecclesiae, or Hymns of the Church, much of the material here was incorporated into the original foreword of the 21 book and the 1937 book. And besides that, this was the first book in the history of our movement that divided hymns from gospel songs. And when Brother Jorgensen put out the Great Songs number 2 in 1937, he did exactly the thing that Hackelman had done, except that he put the gospel songs first and the hymns second. Hackelman put the hymns first and the gospel songs second. But this book was probably the immediate predecessor in the mind of E.L. Jorgensen to Great Songs, maybe number 1 and certainly number 2. This came out in 1911. You might like to look at that. Anyway, I want to tell you about that. Now, we have here also, and Brother Boyd will tell you about this later, a listing with the numbers of all of the people connected with the Restoration Movement whose poems or whose tunes are incorporated in great songs. Okay, and he can tell you a little more about that in a few moments. But we have all their names. We have the dates where we could get them. There are two or three that some of you might even have known from here in Texas in earlier years. I have some other information here that I would be happy for you to look at. Here's a listing of all of the editions of Great Songs of the Church. Great Songs has gone through 58 printings since 1921. And about the only time that no printings were made was when the book was in a transitional stage. 1936, there was no book printed because Jorgensen was getting the number two book ready. When the Chronicle went bankrupt, there was a year there. There was no printing because of the transition from the ownership by the Christian Chronicle to the ownership by Abilene Christian. The time when we were working on the supplement, there were a few years there in which we didn't have any printings because we were working on the supplement. And the same thing true when we were working on this revision. We let the stock go down almost to zero. But maybe you would like to see that. But I want to tell you how we put this book together. I'm looking at a letter right here in front of me, Brother Basden, that we addressed to you on September the 20th, 1982, asking you to become a member of our advisory committee. And my notation says I received your response on September the 28th, 1982, and that then we mailed you a questionnaire on November the 10th, 1982, and so on. But we've got a notation like this in all of our notes about everybody who helped us in putting this book together. And somewhere in late 1981, I guess it was, Dr. Teague authorized the formation of a committee to make a thorough revision of Great Songs of the Church. And since Jack and I had served on the supplement committee, well, we were sort of the first two original members of it. And then we enlisted some other people here on the campus to serve with us in an executive capacity. If you look in your on the back of the reverse of the title page, you will find the hymnal committee listed here. The executive committee up at the top, and then the members of the advisory committee at the bottom. And what we did, first of all, we sat down, Dr. Boyd, myself, Raleigh Blondeau, and Milton Pullen, who were both members of the music faculty here at that time, and originally another member of the music faculty who later left, and a gentleman who lives here in Abilene, travels, and has been involved in a lot of musical work, Larry McComas. Later on, both of them, the other two, Gary Mabry and Larry McComas, could not serve with us because of leaving town and other obligations that they had. So we moved their names down to the advisory committee. But we met, and together we began to try to come up with names of people that we knew that we thought would be interested in good church music. And I don't know how many names we came up with to start with, but 25 or 30, and we sent letters out to all of these people, and then we asked them to provide us with additional names, who would people, men, women, young, old, in every walk of life, members of the church who would help us in putting this book together. And they responded very graciously. They sent us names of all kinds of people. And then we in turn sent the same letter to those people that we had sent to the original group in 1982. Following that, we devised a questionnaire dealing with what we ought to keep, what we ought to leave out, what we ought to change, what the book ought to look like, all kinds of things. And over a period of many months, we got responses from the people on our advisory committee, those who had agreed to serve. There were some that were invited who were not interested, or they didn't have time, or something hindered them from serving. But most of the people that we invited did serve, and they were very gracious with their time, responding to our questionnaires, evaluating with us what we ought to put in Great Songs of the Church Revised. And not one of those fellows ever received a dime for any of this. It cost them the postage to send the responses back, you know. But we're proud to list their names here, you know. And they come from all over the United States. In fact, I sat down and worked out all of the names that appear on that page. There are about 73 names on that page that made up the executive committee, the advisory committee, and what we originally called a liaison committee. The liaison committee later was just incorporated into the advisory committee. But these people worked, let me just tell you where they came from. Now, obviously, the liaison committee and the executive committee was mainly from here in Abilene, and so that put a lot of Texans on the committee. We came up with 24 Texans on this committee, five from Oklahoma, six from Arkansas, six from Tennessee, one from Florida, two from Georgia, two from Louisiana, one from New Hampshire, two from Massachusetts, one from Pennsylvania, one from Delaware, one from West Virginia, one from Michigan, one from Iowa, two from Illinois, two from Missouri, one from Kentucky, four from California, one from Oregon, one from Colorado. Well, that represents, when I was in the fourth grade, I had to memorize the states and capitals of the United States. And they taught me there were New England states and Middle Atlantic states and North Central states and Western states and Southern states. Well, we've got all of those regions represented right there as I memorized them in the fourth grade. We have five Canadians on the committee, one Australian, and one from Scotland. The Queensland province in Australia is represented. We have four women on the committee. If you look at your listing there, you'll find in the alphabetical listing, you'll find Sister Irma Lee Beatty, longtime member of the music faculty at David Lipscomb College, now retired. Very gracious to help us. I should have made the listing. Oh yes, a little farther down, about three below that, Marka Lee Bircher from Dallas, the Dallas area. Very gracious to help us. At the bottom of the second column, Patricia Burke McNichol from Austin. Again, very gracious to help us. And in the last column near the bottom, Peggy Spoons West from West Monroe, Louisiana. Very gracious to help us. We were glad to have these Christian sisters and to get their viewpoint in Christian song. See, as I mentioned to you previously, not all of these people are musicians. They're not all involved in full-time church work, no. But they're all interested in elevating Christian song. And we thank God for every one of them. I would give special honor to James Fulbright. Brother Fulbright works for ACU Press. He has been our leg man interminable hours, clearing copyrights for us, working night and day, writing letters, getting responses, writing more letters. We couldn't have done this without James Fulbright. No. And he's still working. As we found errors or inaccuracies in our first printing, Brother Fulbright's already compiling information for successive printing so we can get the book as perfect as we can possibly make it in terms of credit lines and everything else that would have to do with copyrights. The second debt we would owe would be to Ron Hadfield. Ron Hadfield was the man who kept us in touch with our printer, our music typesetter, constantly. Don Ellingson is the music compositor in Omaha, Arkansas. And Ron stayed on the phone and threw letters to Mr. Ellingson constantly. You know, we could not have done this without Ron Hadfield. It just takes all kinds of detail work. Besides that, it was Ron who helped to devise the format for our book. And then finally to Ruben Santiago, who did the title page and the cover for us, you know, designing what would go on the spine of the book, this embossing of great songs on the front of the book. We owe a tremendous debt to these people, and we could not have put the book together without this effort. But what what we lack to be grateful for is that this edition of Great Songs of the Church represents a church-wide effort, as nearly as we could make it. And you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people, if we had known about them, we would have invited them, maybe some of you, you know. We would have invited them to serve on the committee also. But we believe that it is nationwide, it is Canada-wide, and in the extent that we have Scotland and Australia represented, it is worldwide. And so it's not your usual kind of hymn book put together by one man, you know, or one or two people getting together and making a collection of their favorite songs. We're very happy to have these folk to have served with us in the book. I want to tell you something else about the book. There are 558 songs in this book. We realized that in some ways we were running against the tide in the way that most hymn books in our brotherhood were being put together. It seems that everybody was trying to have a few more songs than the last fellow when they put out their hymn book. And the hymn books were getting so big, so many numbers, most of those numbers not going to be used. We decided it would be better to reduce the numbers and get quality material rather than to keep on increasing numbers of songs that most people were not going to sing anyhow. And we think that we have done that. And in doing this, as we say in the foreword to the hymnal, we have tried to retain the heart of Great Songs of the Church. According to my count, we have 340 numbers of the 558 numbers of songs, not numbers, but songs in the book. 340 of these were in Great Songs number 2. So this is not some kind of newfangled invention full of songs that nobody's ever heard of before. See, about 3/4 of the book is Great Songs number 2. And there are 154 that are brand new to Great Songs of the Church. And there are 64 that either have new words to an old tune or old words to a new tune. So you just kind of figure that this is not something new dropped down from the sky. We have attempted to continue the work of E.L. Jorgensen in Great Songs of the Church. And I think we've done that. I'm convinced that we've done that. I sat down the other day and made a listing of the nations and peoples and races that were represented in Great Songs of the Church. I should have numbered the list because I don't know how many numbers there are, but I'm looking at the page here. There must be 2025 on the page. And I listed them in an alphabetical order. We have songs by the American Negro from Austria, Canada, China, Czechoslovakia, Denmark, England, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Ireland, Italy, Jewish tunes and words, Netherlands, North Africa, Poland, Russia, Scotland, Sweden, Syria, the Ukraine and Russia, the United States, Wales, and Yugoslavia. All of these nations and peoples are represented in Great Songs of the Church. And at one of our earlier sessions today, Dr. Boyd held up this page that indicates that we have every century of the Christian era represented in some way by words or by tunes or translations, beginning with the first century with our Bible texts and coming on down to the 20th century. Only the 7th and 10th centuries are not directly represented in Great Songs of the Church. So we have not only tried to maintain a connection with the past of our own movement through the work of Jorgensen, through the work of Hackelman, through the work of Alexander Campbell, and so on. But we have tried to maintain a continuity with Christian praise throughout the centuries, not just something that's here today and gone tomorrow, but songs that will endure because they have endured. And that's been our aim in Great Songs of the Church. I don't want to infringe any more on Dr. Boyd's time, but I want to call your attention to this little item, which doesn't appear in the book. It's called the Editor's Introduction. This is a little piece that we worked on for the purpose of this brochure, which we sent out to publishers, to churches, everywhere, all over the United States and Canada. But we've tried to explain in that little introduction, and then in the foreword that's also printed in this brochure, the same one that's in the book, the principles on which we worked. And I hope you'll read that. We want you to take these. If you can distribute these brochures, we want you to take them with you. We'd like to empty the box over there. So if you want to take some of those with you to your home church or to other churches, feel free to take them as long as they last. And we'll be grateful to you. All right, Jay.
And I forgot to mention this morning that if you want to buy one of these books down here, one of the hymnals, that they make a special deal. Because you're in our class, you can buy one for $5. So if you want to do that, it'd be fine. I came down to Abilene Christian College in January of 51, the middle of the year, and from Indiana. And when I got home in early June, it was a long semester at that time, I found out that I was the appointed song leader. And from then on, I was a song leader, not a trainer. And I came in as a Bible major, but I quickly found that my 1 year of piano back in high school thoroughly qualified me to be a song leader, at least in Indiana. From that time, through a degree in 3 degrees in music, I led the singing, as it were. Then a few years ago, about 10 years ago, it suddenly struck me one time that instead of leading the singing, what I should be doing would be leading the singers. And that changed my whole attitude toward the music in the worship service, that the singing was not something that you fulfilled. The singing is not an entity of its own. It does not exist as something that you create for God. Rather, it's the singer's reaction. It's the singer's mindset that I had to be worrying about. And when I did that, it changed my attitude and also a good deal of the stuff that I was doing with the singers. When I stopped leading the singing and started leading the singers, I had a different view of what things should be in a worship service. And that's what I wanted to have in the hymn book. I wanted to have something that was for the singers, something that would do them some good. We're going to go over a few things here in the book itself, and then we'll go back and take a look at some other material. There are a bunch of stories that I need to give you an example of how these stories fit into our worship service. I'll bring a couple of those up in just a few minutes. But one of them, when Dr. McCann was talking about our first meeting with Dr. Teague, there were about six of us in there, as I recall. I think our committee and James Fulbright and Dr. Teague and some other, maybe one other. We started talking, well, shall we do it? Shall we not? Shall we whatever about the hymnal? And then somebody, I forgot who it was, said, well, if Great Songs of the Church number 2, if Old Blue goes out of print, what'll we use in chapel? And right then, Dr. Teague said, let's do it. Because he just did not know another hymnal that would have been usable in chapel that he wanted to hear on a daily basis. And that's why one of the prime reasons he wanted this hymnal to use in our chapel. We're going to, eventually they will get in, I think, all of the Christian colleges. They are being used at lectureship out at Pepperdine last year and also this year. There's a move afoot to get them at Lipscomb, and I think that they're trying to get them a couple of other places. It's an inevitable thing because I hate to say this when I'm worked on a thing, but it's so out of class as everything else that there's really not any example. There's not a race. There's just one book, and there's everything else over here in the area. The tune index. The tune index is something that has been around. Of course, we had one in Great Songs number 2, but they are not universally used in our brotherhood. To be truthful, I don't recall whether they were in the other books that are current today or not. Not a tune index, okay. It appears to some that it might be a bit of an extra thing that's not needed, but may I suggest that a tune index is a very handy thing. Because, for one thing, you can look there, you can look down very quickly down the listing of numbers, and wherever there's more than one number, that's where we have a multiple number of tunes. So when you learn one, if it's a new tune, you learn one, you actually learn two. And remember that the text is what is important. And some of the, there are 45 of these doubles in here, and there are six triples. There are six of them that have three different texts on them because they were just such good tunes. The Duke Street, dum da 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 da, that is an excellent tune, and it fits beautifully into virtually any singing situation. The one I want to look at is number 188. You'll turn to 188. This melody was in the supplement. The melody and the words, "Come Thou Long Expected Jesus." It's an Advent song. This one has been sung in denominational worship for a long time. Well, back around 1830s when it was written, the old Heiferdahl or Heiferdahl tune. We also, with the just two lines here, "Born thy people to deliver, born a child and yet a king." It's a very touching text. Then go over to page 253. This is an extremely powerful song. "Alleluia, sing to Jesus, his the scepter, his the throne." It's a tune as strong as "All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name," in the same type of type of sound. And then number 404. Now we have "I Will Sing of My Redeemer," and another place in here, over on page 407, we have the traditional tune to "I Will Sing of My Redeemer." But we wanted this tune because we think that it's a better tune. It's more in keeping with the words themselves. "I will sing of my Redeemer and his wondrous love to me." It is not a fist-waving song, a set of words. It is a song that is meditative. "Sing, O sing of my Redeemer, with his blood he purchased me." This is not a marching song to Zion. This is a song of gratitude and thanksgiving. It's a song that a set of words that I believe fit this tune extremely well. Now there is a mistake at the end of the third line there, which has been tidied up and will come out on the next the next printing. "Sing, O sing of my Redeemer." No, that's not the one. It's the one back on 253, I guess it is. Anyway, there's a mistake in there that will be fixed. You'll see it when you go through it. There are a number of these. There are, as I said, six of them that have three different sets of the tune. Of the ones that are doubles in there, look at number 414. That's incorrect. I want the Germanic tune. 415, excuse me. 415. This is the one that we know better. "Where cross the crowded ways of life, where sound the cries of race and clan," an urban song. Then if you'll go over to page 503, "Take up your cross," the Savior said, "if you would my disciple be." And because we already know the tune, then you have a brand new set of words for the congregation. As a matter of fact, if you will learn 51 tunes, if you do not already know them, but if you learn 51 tunes, you'll actually wind up with, I believe it's 108 different songs, different texts in here. That by learning these extra tunes, you have doubled the amount of material that a congregation has for its worship. And that's what we're aiming at. That's what we want. We want the congregations to have the ability to worship more thoroughly and to increase that vocabulary that I mentioned. Now, in the scripture index that we have, I talked about that a little while ago. The scripture index right now is pretty comprehensive. A lot of material is there. And on the reprint, the ones that are in our book will be in boldface. So that'll help you a good deal in the congregational readings. Even before that, you can use it for building sermons, if you're into that, for classes, particularly for devotionals for the people. A well-constructed devotional is a wonderful thing. A haphazard thing is just basically fun. It's recreation, what I call recreational music. And there's no point in that. There are times when you want to do it on a Wednesday night to teach them. I even use those old gospel songs with the alto lead and the bass lead in Wednesday night things sometimes, because they teach people how to read parts. It gives them independence. It gives them confidence. It doesn't give them much of a sense of God. I looked around there one time, we were doing Ring It Out, and I saw about four people, including one of my daughters and my wife, saying, Ring It Out, Ring It Out. And I thought, their mind is not on the words all that much at that particular point. Right at that moment, I think. The scripture index for personal devotions. That's what I would encourage you to use. We have never had a hymn book that was good for personal devotion. It was not a comprehensive book. It was not comprehensive enough, and I think that this one will be. It is a meditative book, and as was mentioned before, the number of songs we have that are of a praise nature, praise and prayer. This is where we added. I would imagine of those 153 new ones, probably half of them or more are praise and prayer hymns, because that was where we were sadly lacking in most of our other books. The author-composer index is another thing that is not in any of our, as far as I know, none of our Brotherhood books. Is this correct?
The only book that ever had this that I know of in our Brotherhood was the Old Christian Hymns number one. Brother Pullius and Brother Sanderson and a few others put out in 35.
Yeah.
They put out a Song Leaders edition.
Ah.
And in that Song Leaders edition, there was
an author-composer thing in there. Well, there was one, I think I gave that to you. It had some pictures in it. It just interleafed occasionally. They would have some pictures. Did I share? Maybe I just showed that to you one time. It was a stamps book. Yeah, it was a paperback, an old paper book. And it had pictures of, and all of the men were 900 years old and had beards down to their waist. You know, it was not the most inspiring kind of a thing, but it was a start. Anyway, the author-composer index, this is usable because if people do not realize that we have a history. I tell my students in my music history, music literature, and my introduction to music classes, and my music appreciation classes, that one of the reasons that we have music is to get contact with what has gone before. If we are here and we think that everything began with us, then we feel isolated. And we have enough isolation in the world today that if you'll use the hymn book, if you'll use music or art forms, then you will have a feeling of continuity with what has gone before. We are only the most recent manifestation of worshiping man. We are not the first ones ever to worship. And so if we have a continuity with our Brotherhood, with the Restoration Movement, with where we were, then I think it'll be good for us. And one of the things we can do is to have devotionals by members of the Church of Christ, or at least in the Restoration history. We have here a listing of these that Dr. McCann has compiled, and there are 37 in our book. Now, what do we have in the other hymnal? About a dozen or something like that?
Yeah, no more than 15.
No more than that at all. I think I counted 12 one time that I knew of, and he knows them far more than I, but about 15. So we have more than doubled the number of people here who come from a Restoration background. Some of them want to surprise you when you get in here also. So I'm going to leave this up here. Come up and get a copy of it, if you will, please, to take it back and keep it around. Because you could do a series of Sunday night devotionals based upon material, music, and or words by people who are our people within our own particular background. You could have also, by using the same thing, a series of devotionals only by women composers or women authors. Not so many composers, but mostly authors in there, but there are a bunch of those. And so you could do that, and it would give a greater feeling, I think, for the women of the church to have a feeling of continuity there also, that they're not a second-class citizen. My father-in-law is a Methodist, and he, when he comes to town, I tend to use a fair number of hymns by Wesley, and he appreciates that. Fine hymns right out of our hymnal, but if I use these hymns, then he has a feeling of worth also. Everybody else in the whole family, both sides, are members of the Church of Christ. He is the lone Methodist down there, and he feels isolated, and has for a long time. So when I use these hymns, I even ask him which hymns he would like sometimes. That he has grown up with. This is a way that you can go together with somebody. If you're going to have a meeting, some Methodist sometime. Figure out all the Methodist hymns you got and use them. Don't make them swim upstream. You swim upstream and help them out. That's where the indices back here will come in handy. Use them for the devotional and for an evangelistic outreach. couple of things here that I wanted to mention, and that is that Old Blue is going to, did we mention this, that it's going to be kept in print. We are not going to allow that one to go out of print, because there are a bunch of folks that, one, they want a quality book that has that is in shape notes, and so it's going to be kept around. And we just made a new printing, I think of 6,000 copies or something like this. So, see, this is not an insignificant number of books that are going to be sold over the next 2 years. Also, some people got brand new books a few months before this came out, and so they'll piece that out for a while. Then when they all wear out, then they will get the new book, and they are going to keep it around. So remember that that will be available for people who happen to want this, the shape note versions of it. Someone mentioned this morning, am I or Dr. McCann or the two of us together available to do some talking at congregations? The answer is yeah, you bet, we're portable. If you can just let us know when and where, and usually the school can split for a car to get us some. We don't need money for it, we just never made any money out of it yet. Don't think you need to start now. Why break up a good idea? So if you've got a place for us that you think would be good, we'll come down and teach a class. Dr. McCann's a fine preacher, and if you want him by himself, he's a good song leader too, and he can preach and or lead singing. The two of us could come together sometime if you'd like us to. As a possibility, we just come down on Sunday morning, or we could do a thing on Sunday night, much like what we've done here. If the congregation, if you've got some leaners in there and you're not sure just yet which way you want to go, then have us down. We'll do you something, get them whooped up toward our direction here. You just have to have faith that the songbook is going to make it, and we do. It's for the future. There was one congregation, which shall be nameless, but in that congregation there were five elders, I believe it was. Four of the elders wanted this book. The fifth elder was related to one of the men who edited one of the other hymnals, the more popular hymnals we have here. He was going to give those hymnals to the congregation. And, you know, it's hard to look that in the face when you're going to get free books. But finally, the other elders went among themselves and some other members of the congregation and got a special contribution to buy the book just for the congregation. And it's been a tremendous help. I got a beautiful letter from the guy about that. Maybe you got one also about how much help it has been from within their congregation. If we can help in any way like that. We don't want to have some kind of an intramural war with other people who have different hymn books. There are different ways of looking at hymnody. We think this is a way that will benefit the brotherhood and will benefit what I would call the average congregation. That is, a congregation that wants to progress. And there are congregations which, for one reason or another, are not capable of progressing at the present time, or they're locked into one style. God loves those too. He better have some pity on me because of my hard-headedness at times, and I'm sure that he will have pity on them if they have done incorrectly in some area. So they can worship with those hymnals. I've done it. I've led singing out of those hymnals. If we can help you in any way, why, please let us know on that. I was trying to think if there's anything else. Yeah, we wanted to do one other thing here. We did a little bit of it this morning, and that is, brother was talking about shape notes, and how do you teach round notes? How do you, what kind of things do you do with the congregation to teach them round notes? Let me give you two things that you can do fairly quickly with a modest amount of musical background. One is with the hand signals up here, and that's the first thing that should be done. These have been used. My daughter got a degree here a couple years ago in music, and she's teaching in the public schools here in Abilene. And she does that with her second graders. She does it like, there was a boys choir up here at Breckenridge, a children's choir, that the lady up there, I talked with her about that, and she did that with fifth and sixth graders. I did it with junior high and high school and college students and adults and old people. When I began. So you know, anywhere from 7 years old to on the last legs, it will work in there. The main thing is to show them success. They have success very, very quickly using hand motions like this, okay? To show you how it operates. Ready, everybody down here? Keep it low because some of the guys are not going to be able to get very high. One more time, ready?
One, two, one, two, three. Five, four,
It's tricky. And you have, you don't ever put them down. Have a lot of fun with them. Laugh with them on that, because they will make mistakes on that. And you will make mistakes, too, if you're up there trying it. Then, like I did this morning, let me just divide it right down here. And this hand over here, I better divide it right down here. Can I even it up a little bit? This hand over here goes this side, and this hand over here goes this side. It takes a little bit of trying, but I've been doing this for a bunch of years, so I can do it a little quicker. Ready, everybody? 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 4, 5, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 3, 5, 4, 3. Introduce dissonance. Dissonance is the pepper in the stew. Dissonance is the sound that you go through to something else. It never is a goal in itself. It always points up wherever you're going. It points up the word that comes, or the syllable that comes after that. That's a musical device for flavoring the music. And if the congregation can do this, you were sight reading in two parts in here. Now, you people are for music, so that's the reason you did well. But a congregation is going to be for it also. And the problems you will occur with the women who are 55 and older. They haven't made a mistake in 27 years, and they're not about to make a mistake here. So, they'll say, and these tiny voices of Elfland will be out there, and they won't want to sing. They won't want to sing very loudly at all. So have faith and have patience. Josh them and have fun, and don't ever call them down. And don't ever have them do it alone. It's always a group thing. And when you do that, you can have a lot of fun just with this. Then, when you have proven to them that they do not need shape notes, and that they can, in fact, sight read in two parts, for some of the guys, it's a brand new thing. They have never in their ever-loving life sight-read anything. And you've got given them a brand new start on a whole language. I've watched this with some football boys. Football boys always got the macho thing, you know. They go and have to have a little tin can around here in their hip pocket, you know, and then go around like this. Well, I worked with those football boys and watched them as they learned how to sight-read, and it is a wonderful thing. One other technique that you start with, as I did it up here, this morning, that you start with a single line. Don't give them a staff. They don't need a staff. They need one single line right here. I'll even pull it over here a little farther so we can get to it. And what you do is you give them a single line here and above the line, like so. All you'd have is one right here. Everybody sing it.
One, two, one, two.
That's all there is to it. And when they have done that, then you go back and you say, okay, that sounded so good. Now we're going to put it right here. And they're going to say, where's one? And you say, it's there. But it was there. I know. I'm in charge of this world. And I make the ones. All the ones are below the line now. So all you got to do is that. Okay, let's take it. See how it all. I'll show you something here. Ready?
One, two, three, two, three.
What do you want to do?
Go on.
That's exactly right. And what you do then is prove to them, everybody's going to feel good. It's like a cold glass of iced tea in the middle of July. It's going to feel good to go down to that one. And they say, I felt that. That's good. I'm musical too. And all you've got to do is keep working like this, and you eventually will have people who have the confidence to sight read. This is very simple. You keep doing it, but with success, success breeds success. And the further you go, the more every time that they go through a book, they think, oh yeah, I know where that one's going, or oh yeah, I know where that. They won't get the big skips, but they get the ones going along. If there are a few people in there who can get it, well, you're going to have a congregation who's going to be able to do more. Always emphasize, four-part harmony is not four times as worshipful, but it can make a beautiful sound to the Lord. It is a gift. It is a crafted thing that they owe it to God to make it as good as it can be, because it is a gift to the Creator. Also, if somebody is visiting there, it will make an impression upon them if they have a better sound. It will be so much better than most places. Most denominational congregational singing is really grisly, really grim. I got a letter after the article came out in Newsweek. I got a letter from a guy that was saying that he understood about emotions and that sort of thing. And he said, his background, he said, was in the Catholic Church, and he went down there every Sunday to the Mass, and he would hear them caterwauling away in a language that he did not understand. And he liked the sound of it, but he did not understand one thing about that was being done. He said, no matter what you did to your book, it's got to be better than what I had. And I thought, oh, what a terrible tragedy that the man had all those years and nothing that really grabbed his soul that he could understand. You get them going on these two little techniques right here, and I guarantee that they're going to be doing. Because, let me show you one other thing here. Let me take it, okay, let's split up again right here. One other thing, ready? We'll start, I'll give you one last note here, so we will end up on the right one there. Okay? For this half over here, you all start there on the first note, is number one. You over here start in its first note is number three. So this three, one, sing the first notes.
Three, one,
ready, sing.
One, four, three, four, three, three, four, three, four, one.
See, now you're sight reading in two parts. You're sight reading, and the men can sing that bottom part and just go ripping through that rascal, and they think, wow, I did it. And that's what you want. That's exactly what you want to do there. So, you know, Forrest and I come down sometime, we can take them through this and give them 30 minutes or something like that of some sight reading and make them feel good about it. It'll work with with the shape notes also, but it's just, it proves to them that they don't have to have shape notes. That's the first thing you have to do to it. Now, the tempest done fugitive here. We've got about 10 minutes left if anybody has some questions.
What about the chromatics?
Chromatics. What I do with that is I tell them, don't worry about it, and I say a sharp goes up and a flat goes down, and don't worry about it until you'll probably hear it in the right direction. Most people can hear it, and there will be somebody around there who will get it. But the main thing I want to do is get as much success as possible. The ones that I mentioned in here that we sang the early morning, that these are ones that are everything is stepwise, and they can sing soprano and alto and tenor and bass if you'll choose them very carefully, and they'll prove to them that they can sing whatever is around there. Yes, sir.
On a couple of the songs, I've noticed that the tenor part especially has been changed from the original version, I guess, or what's most common.
Yeah, the received text has been changed, I think. I made that for ease of performance. Because it was hard, there's no reason to keep it around. And I've had people call me and say they didn't like it that way, that they learned it that way when they were kids and they don't want to change. But my answer to that is, why should succeeding generations have the same problems? That just because you learned it doesn't mean everybody has to learn it. So I change it around for performance ease, so that it can be learned more quickly and it can be sung more easily in a congregation. That's the reason I lowered a bunch of them also. Yes, sir.
I was just, I've been planning on starting a singing class for the middle of my carnage, just get formulate a few ideas. I'm tickled to death by what you showed me.
Yeah, okay.
You know, this is great. Yeah. Boy, am I going to have to work with
you?
Yeah. My fingers won't even bend like that.
You better get used to being laughed at, because I've done it for years, and I still get all good stuff up here on this thing. Yeah. It'll take a little bit of a while, but once you get into the thing, you know, once you just start out, then it'll come after a while. I can't do that. People can do that. I can't do that. There was one story, well, not a story. I just wanted the Father of Mercies. We had a problem on Father of Mercies. He couldn't find where it came from. Did you tell him where the song finally came from?
Probably all of you in your congregation have sung Father of Mercies day by day. Do you sing that, each of you? That's number 125. And we had for many years in our older books, it had said it had been attributed to Frederick Faber and others. But we finally found who the others were, namely Alice Flowerdew, and she had written the second and third stanzas. She was an English lady who came with her husband, who was a minister, to the West Indies, and he died, and so on. But she wrote the second and third stanzas, Father of Mercies, God of Love. But we had hunted the other for years, and finally one day, I was pulling hymnals off my shelf, looking for different things, and I pulled off this Catholic hymnal, published back in the 1920s. And I saw a song, and it said, Mother
of mercies day by day. And sure enough, there was the song. That first stanza was a song to Mary, the Virgin Mary, by Frederick Faber, who had been an Anglican and then had become a Roman Catholic. And so he had written a hymn to the Virgin Mary. It had many stanzas. But what Brother Jorgensen had done, this was one of Jorgensen's books that I told you about. He had taken that beautiful poem and changed one word and made it Father of Mercies, and it made a beautiful song to God the Father.
Recycling, I think we call that. Yeah. Okay, are there any other questions that we could help? Yes, ma'am.
In our ladies singing class that we've started, we have one of these generic sort of songbooks, and it does have the shape notes in it. Now we're all real excited about learning the shape note.
Good thinking. Yeah, you know.
Is this a new thing now to just go with just the
fine
notes? And
Well, what's happening is that the old ones are dying out. Yeah, I mentioned that at the 11 o'clock class this morning. Yeah, they're dying out. Almost nobody's using them now except the Country Baptists, the Pentecostals, and the Church of Christ. And we're trying to get out of the business of it. As the older people die off, it will be a dying art. And so it's becoming easier and easier. Young people simply do not know what they are and certainly not how to use them. If you have a women's group there, this hymnal will be very handy. The way you do that is you just put everything up a whole step and have sopranos and altos and make it sopranos and second soprano singing alto, and then the alto sing down on the tenor line. And it makes a very nice sound. Don't even need the bass. And it makes a very nice sound, and you can do that. That's a wonderful thing for funerals. If you have a group of there, a lady can have maybe 15, five on each part, and all she has to do is get two or three for each part to do a funeral. And it's a great gift to the community, for anybody, for any denomination who would wish it, and it can be used very nicely. For men's voices, I was telling a couple of them that we did it over at Minter Lane. We got a lot of good singers over at Minter now. They just sort of gravitated there over the years. And one night I did Father of Mercies, as a matter of fact. I had the women sing the first stanza, and I told them, I said, okay, sing soprano and alto, and a few of you altos drop down and sing tenor. And then I said, okay, men, on the second stanza, you're going to sing the sing four-part harmony, and a few of you guys that can sing in falsetto, flip up and sing tenor, sing the alto up in the right range, and a few of you sing melody. And it was as near to a choir as I've ever come with a congregation. It was just one. It was one of those nights when everything fell right, and it was a gorgeous, gorgeous sound. I don't know whether it was more more worshipful from the Lord's standpoint or not, but it sure did impress me and the people who heard it there. They had a warm feeling just because they were able to make a gift to God. And as far as crafting a gift, that's one way to do it. Then we sang the last stanza in four-part harmony, which kind of turned bland after those other two things.
I guess Dr. McCann knows this, but this Frederick Faber wrote Faith of Our Fathers in a similar way.
Yes.
It was different words, an honor to Mary.
Is that right?
To the Catholic.
Yes, it has several stanzas that were to Mary.
Mm-hmm. And trying to bring people back to the church.
Yes.
We left out a number of stanzas in a number of books. One that we have is the Holy Manna, Brethren, We Have Met to Worship. The second stanza has, see, poor sinners, death is coming, hell is moving, you know, and it's all these ugh, kind of a sound. And I just didn't need that one at all. I was listening to reading one the other day that was one of those things that, one of those songs that are just one of the most depressing songs in the world. Take one more.
You said about raising the note. What do you feel about the tenors going up an octave?
It makes a false soprano. You don't have the melody at that point.
Sound
yeah.
High.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's
like
the problem. If you'll raise it up two half steps or maybe three half steps if it's a relatively low soprano line. Yeah, right. And you don't want to get them too high. If they go above an F, then you're going to get some screechers. If you'd raise it up to where the top note is like an E, then everything else drops down and it makes a nice little sound, and then that makes a very nice effect. Thank you all. Keep us in mind, and if anybody wants a book, give me $5 and you're in business.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joseph.
I appreciate this.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many will you sell at $5?
Not over 300.
Can I have two?
You may have two, yes, sir.
I made it. I bought my books, took them to the car.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right.
So he okayed. He says, okay, as far as McCann.
Surely do.
Could I get 10 of them?
I don't think we could quite do that.
Can't quite do that.
Can't quite do that.
That is.
Not at a nickel a piece, no.
Could I get you two more?
I did.
Could I get two?
So you can, I'll give you a couple of three if you just want to do that.
I can do my purpose, you'd allow more.
Take two more, okay?